believe we've gotten the message. Turn away from diet culture, diet mentality, and deprivation. Stimulating our metabolism, building muscle, while getting sustainable results is really the goal. Theodore Roosevelt said, "If you believe you can, you are halfway there." And maybe our ultimate fitness is not about willpower, but accountability and learning from the failures. If we change nothing, nothing will change. So instead of looking at the scale and wanting to see the needle move, just start with doing the things that will make your insides healthy. Once we embrace this idea, we will ultimately see the results showing up for us in what we see in the mirror. This is how our next guest looks at each client. Get going in the right direction, but not focusing on perfection. Health, wellness, career, relationships, and everything in between. We're removing the taboo from what really matters in midlife. I'm your host, Michelle Follin, and this is Asking for a Friend. Welcome to the show, everyone. Are you tired of the all-or-nothing mentality when it comes to your health and fitness? Our guest today is a dietitian and personal trainer turned accountability coach and podcaster. Lindsay House wants to help you get off the sidelines of life and feel energetic so that you can enjoy all the great stuff ahead in midlife and beyond. This podcast is about direction, not perfection, and rewriting the rules to be realistic for attainable goals. Welcome to Asking for a Friend, Lindsay House.
Oh, I am so honored to be here with you today, Michelle.
Yeah, it was kind of a long road to get to where we are. We connected through a guest that I had on the podcast, and you two are very good friends. She said, "Oh, you have got to have Lindsay on your show." And that was back in May, April, something like that.
Yes. Yes.
It was a while ago. Lindsay moved back to town and she got settled, and then we were able to make it happen.
And I'm so excited.
I would love for you to tell the audience a little bit about you. Love to hear where you're from, any kind of family details, and how you got to where you are today.
I don't want to bore your audience. I feel like we always, I've heard you say this in an episode, Michelle, as well, that we just want to dive into the details. And I think we do. So I'll be quick, but I became a dietitian straight out of college, did my year internship in Cincinnati, Ohio, then started to do a little bit of acute care. So I was in a hospital, but I also loved health clubs. So I worked at the Cincinnati Sports Club as a consulting dietitian. And that's where they were like, "Hey, have you ever considered personal training? And then in between your nutrition clients, you could be a personal trainer out on the floor." So I dove into that, loved the whole fitness arena almost more than the nutrition component. So I just had this beautiful pairing of both the nutrition and fitness, and then ended up in a weight management center and did both surgical and non-surgical weight loss, which is where I met our mutual friend, Dr. Little, and really became highly aware of the importance of the mental component too. It was kind of at that moment that I'm like, I should have also double majored in psychology, because it's all of these moving pieces that round out this beautiful health journey. That's kind of the quick and dirty. And then I always had clients tell me, "Lindsay, I know what to do. I just need to do it." And that's where the accountability coaching came in, because I felt like I was doing less instructing and more just handholding on this beautiful journey where we get to walk side by side with each other and enjoy the process, because it is a process, slow and steady.
Well, I think what you're saying is really this gives you an opportunity to treat the whole client. There's that whole mindset thing that you have to get a handle on before you can have success.
Absolutely. Yes.
So, Lindsay, being a registered dietitian and an accountability coach, what work do we need to do on the front end with our mindset to transform our bodies?
you so much for asking this question. It really is one of those areas that most of us are willing to dive into, getting into a gym or getting into the kitchen and making healthy meals. And we kind of forget that there's this whole other component of mindset, of getting our brain on board, of doing the shifts of mentality to make sure that our journey is sustainable. Because I think that's the area that we don't understand. We can all jump in and make shifts that will last temporarily, because any of us can go hardcore in one area for any given amount of time. But it's making sure that we understand what were our barriers to start with, why some of those healthy behaviors or habits weren't happening. It's this piece when I'm working with clients that most people aren't ready to dive into. Hey, what are my limiting beliefs around why I can't stick to something? Or most people might be aware they might be having some emotional eating going on. So there's some areas where we're aware and ready to dive into the mental piece. But I would say for most people, we need gently guided in. We need handheld into, let's start to work through some food and fitness, and the brain piece comes along with it. Back to your original question, I like to layer that in as I work with clients. It's not normally an area where right out of the chute we're talking about what are the mental pieces we need to talk about. It's once we get to know each other, and then it's a, hey, let's talk about emotional eating right here. Let's talk about that barrier, why you're not able to get to that next actionable step.
Do you ever have to dig way, way back to childhood? And I mean, I got to think that a lot of our habits and some of our frame of reference is really built at a very, very young age.
Absolutely is. I will also say, I've heard myself say, I wish I could have been like hand-holding since they were five. You know, this would maybe look a little different. But in that same breath, if anyone's going, well, then it's hopeless because there's been all these habits and all these years of built in, it's also okay. We are, as humans, we can change. We can change habits. We can change within our lifestyle. Like, there is nothing, I don't care if you're 50, 60, 70 years old, there is never an age that we hit where we're no longer able to make these healthy changes. It might be a little harder, or it might feel a little different, but we are all capable of change.
Okay. My audience is primarily midlife women. How is the weight loss and fitness process different for women once we hit like 40 plus?
Yes, I feel like I want to put everybody's minds at ease here. That because yes, it's different. And then also in the same breath, no, it's not. I think one of the biggest things that changes as we age, and this is a positive, is our why. Like, why do we care? Where before it might have been a little bit more for getting those numbers to decrease on the scale, to lose weight, to feel better in the jeans. You know, sometimes as we age, we get to this point where like, does it even matter anymore? I don't care about some of the stuff that I used to care about. But when I say the why changes, I think you and I have very similar populations that it can be about, I want to get on the floor and play with my grandkids. I want to take that next cool travel trip. I'm retired now. I don't want to ever question, am I going to fit on the airplane comfortably? Am I going to be able to walk the excursions that are going to happen on that travel? We're fighting for that quality of life right now. And I will tell you that that fight is so much more motivating than fighting just for the scale number. The scale or weight loss is a side benefit, but the cool, I'm going to call them wins or successes in our journey, is when we're taking the trip, when we're jumping on the roller coaster with our kids, when we're doing the living life, getting off the sidelines and participating, is when I'm like, oh, we've arrived.
Well, yeah. And it's got to be more than fitting into the bathing suit or the dress for the wedding. I look at those as very short-term goals, but we're looking at really quality of life type of issues as we get into even our 70s and 80s, right?
Yes. And I think you were really asking that question more from a, should we be doing more resistance training or balance training? Like, should our workouts be shifting as we age? And yes, I think I see a lot of women who do a lot of the cardio. They're still pounding the pavement. They're still running, trying to get the same results that they got as a 20 or a 30-year-old. And we definitely don't see that as much. If we talk to any women in our age range, things do change. Our habits need to change. Our workouts, we're going to thrive a little more in the, we need to stretch. We need balance built in. We need to keep lifting, resistance training, those things that are going to benefit us now, but also into that next decade of our life. And I think that's where it's just so important that we're allowed to be in the gym. We're allowed to be weight training. You know, we don't have to be, but there's not an age where all of that stops all of a sudden.
Well, and I think, what you're saying is we've got to prioritize strength over skinny. And we've talked about that on the podcast. And I've even shared some of my own epiphanies about really lifting much heavier than I ever thought I would. It's moving from the 8 and 10 pound dumbbells to the 12, 15, and 20s. But it's knowing when to stop too. Could you address that a little bit about listening to your body?
Oh, that's how I was just going to say this. Listen to your body. Your body's speaking to you much sooner than we normally are ready to hear it or listen. And an example of that would be to be in the gym and now all of a sudden we're excited about lifting heavier. Our body's capable of it. But you might be feeling that little like twinge in your lower back and you ignore it, and then all of a sudden we've pulled something. Most of us could avoid that if we would have taken a little bit more of a quiet ear to our body to go, how we check in with your arms, with your abs, with your back, with your legs. I know that sounds kind of hokey, but there really is this check-in process of how's everybody feeling today? Where can I push and where do I need to behave?
When you are working with a client and say they do have knee pain or they've got a hip that flares up every once in a while, do you have a process to vet what their capabilities are? Do we need to go get checked out by an orthopedic? At what point do you have to make that decision?
So I am a team player through and through. Like I love when a client has multiple resources working with them. We call it the accountability dream team, to have the physical therapist, to have the ortho, dietitian, psychologist. Like that's my dream of every client. But to your question, if something is irritating them and they work out and they can feel it, but they wake up the next day and there's no reprimand, that's like just a good listening to your body. You didn't push it to the point where you're debilitated the next day. If something's been a lingering issue, get it checked out. That's my forever recommendation. Like, you will never regret getting something checked out. You will regret ignoring it, and then one day now we're dealing with surgery around it. So I don't think people remember this or always think to go preemptively. There are concierge physical therapists. You don't have to have a referral. You can just go get like a full body checkup to see, do I have any areas from past injuries that might be surfacing right now or might cause me trouble in the future? I've used my chiropractor that way too. It's kind of this, we hate to spend money on something when it's not bothering us completely. We're really good at workarounds. That this past injury that we've just been able to work around for the last 10 years, but at some point it resurfaces. So that would be my recommendation to your listeners, is take that preemptive moment and get the body scan once in a while. Grab the professional, spend the money so that you're not long-term suffering.
I'm really glad you brought that up about the physical therapist because I have had a physical therapist on the show and have been to one myself when I got diagnosed with osteoporosis. And I had no clue all the stuff that they do. I mean, it's head to toe.
Or should be.
You got a little jaw pain, go see the physical therapist. You have an ankle that's aggravating you. Well, sometimes it's just your gait and they can assess all that stuff. I mean, it's just amazing what they can do.
I agree. And caught early, now it's a small tweak. Like, I love that you just mentioned the gait. If we're pampering one side of our body and somebody can catch that and help correct it, now we're back and flowing. But if we're constantly compensating, now it can be the other hip that starts to hurt. There's other things that we're throwing off for that compensation. It is really important to catch those things early.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to mention too is pelvic floor. I know there's a lot of online advice, but going to a physical therapist that knows about the pelvic floor. If you are trying to get fit and you're aggravated because you're leaking, you don't have to do that. And I'm sure you've worked with clients that issue. It would be a real bummer.
Yes. And I have a guest for you on that one too. That could be a whole nother episode, right?
Okay. Yeah. We've covered that topic before, but you can really dig deep into that one because there's so much that it touches within our bodies. This is probably more of a comment than a question, but in one of your podcasts, your guest suggested that women, primarily midlife women or older women, need to slow down at the gym and be more intentional with their movement and form. That really stuck with me because you see a lot of people at the gym and they're really working it quick and, you know, I think trying to buzz through their workouts, but that's probably not the best thing.
So I think it goes back to that pounding the pavement comment that I said before. A lot of us, especially again, this population, where some of us are moms coming out of that like crazy season of life where you're trying to pack it all in. And we carry some of these behaviors over with us. And again, as a 20, 30-year-old, to go too fast through a workout or lift a little too heavy doesn't have the same repercussion that it can have as a 40, 50, 60, 70-year-old. And I keep saying all these different ages, and that's intentional because I love when I see a 90-year-old at the gym. You know, again, I'm trying to give your audience, there are health heroes out there that people are still working the system, you know, and doing it healthfully and their body is thriving through it and not being injured, but because they've been listening to their body and because that slow and steady, it's not that every different exercise has its own benefit. And I think what my guest was also saying, time under tension is a different way to get some really good results for muscle training that doesn't have to be heavy lifting. A plank would be a good example. To sit there and hold a plank hold is definitely ab defining without having to do heavy crunches with a weight on your chest that would be a little more detrimental or could be to lower back pain or whatnot. So just finding other ways to protect our bodies and still get results.
I think that's great advice. I would love to get your thoughts about intermittent fasting for women 50 and older, because I got a few questions from my listeners. And the question was, I'm really having a hard time getting in all my macros when I fast. She says if she does, I don't know, from dinner time till 11 o'clock the next morning, her window is really closing in on her. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yes, I have thoughts for your listener. And then I have generalized thoughts. I'm going to start with generalized and then I'll come back to your specific question. Anytime we talk about anything, and I'm going to spread this from fasting type thinking to low carb to counting macros, everything is a very individualized journey. And there are going to be some things, even if science says this is really beneficial, it's beneficial for our brain health, it's beneficial for losing weight, that sometimes it's not beneficial for the person or self if it doesn't fit your needs, your personality. So meaning for some people to not eat a breakfast and to go all the way till noon is kind of easy for them. They're like, I might have done it anyways. And as long as they're not going into the next meal starving, then yes, there's research that shows that that length of time between food is, it can be gut restorative, again, brain health, there's benefit. For the person who wakes up hungry and it's a constant thought all morning, I can't eat, I can't eat, I can't eat. All of a sudden, now we've kicked somebody into diet mentality, and it no longer in my head serves in the beneficial camp. We're doing some detrimental, we're honing in on something that's hard, it's deprivational. I don't think it's a great thing. So that's kind of a different topic than what you're asking, but I'm forever going to keep coming back to, we have to check in with ourselves as an individual and say, is this something, if I started it, could I keep doing it for the next 10 years, for the next 20 years? Because then that's a really good gut check of, this works well in my life. I can implement this and it's healthy. Great. And again, if it's a, I could do this for maybe a month and then I need to shut it down, then it should probably be a no, and we should probably find something else that works with that. Okay, to your client's question of how do I fit in all of my macros? And just for the listener who's going, I hear the word macros all the time, and I don't know what you're talking about.
I know. I was going to ask you to define macros because I was like, oh, maybe I, yeah, we should probably go back and define that.
It truly is. It's just our bigger nutrients. So it's our carbohydrates, our protein, our fat. It's our things that we get most of our nutrients in. And then micros are your micronutrients, your vitamins, your minerals. And normally we get all of those then through eating our macros, through eating our protein and our fat and our carbs. If somebody's struggling to fit in the amount of grams of protein that they need, we'll stick with protein for a second, in that time window that sometimes we either, and if they're liking fasting and they want to keep this as their lifestyle, not diet. You're going to be like, okay, Lindsay, we get it. No diet mentality. If they want to keep that, then we can talk about ways to up protein in smaller quantities still. Like they could still have a small serving, but a chicken breast is going to give a lot bigger bang for their buck than a serving of beans or even peanut butter. It doesn't mean that we have to supplement necessarily. It just means that we need to check and see where our different sources are coming from.
All right. And then on that note, protein, how much per day?
I'm going to give you a very bland answer because everyone's so individual. An older person would need different than a younger person, a woman different than a man, an athlete different than a sedentary person. But my bland answer for everyone to just start from is you take your weight and you divide that by 2.2, and that puts your weight into kilograms. And now you're looking at, if you multiply your weight in kilograms times 0.8 to 1.2, you get this range of protein. And for a lot of us, that looks anywhere from 55 to 80 to 120 grams of protein. But again, it would just depend on the individual.
So if you look at the RDA for protein, how would that be different then?
It's actually not, but your RDA depends on how many calories fits your lifestyle. For a highly active man needing 3,000 calories a day, that's where they're getting their breakdown of protein, fat, and carb.
Okay.
Versus a sedentary woman might be sitting at a 12 to 1500 calorie diet, and their breakdown would look very different.
If someone is a vegan, how are their protein needs adjusted? Because I would assume if you are vegan, you're going to naturally eat more carbohydrate because of the sources of protein that a vegan would have to eat.
No, you're spot on. It's actually, I have a couple of vegan clients, and it's always an area where we're like, carbs are fine, but if we're struggling to lose weight, it is an area that we can nitpick. And so it's like, it is a little more difficult when you're trying to get your protein from beans, you know, a carbier source. Or you will appreciate this, Michelle. My mom calls herself a wine-loving vegan with seafood exception. And so for somebody like my mom to be able to even add a little bit of protein in, like seafood, all of a sudden it makes it super simple to hit protein needs. The needs stay the same, but the sources differ, right? So the person who's even vegetarian and willing to eat an egg or willing to eat cheese, they're going to have a much easier time getting to those protein levels than the true vegan who really is limited. And in that case, especially depending on their activity level, they might need to supplement to some extent.
I was having a conversation with a friend. I post food on Instagram and Facebook just to give people ideas of things to eat and how to get that protein in at lunch and dinner. And it is possible. And my one friend said, well, I don't eat fish or I don't like eggs or, and I'm like, oh my God, you know, and I think about what I'm eating. And so I think for someone like you, who's a dietitian and an accountability coach, is really the challenge of accommodating people's food aversions as well, right?
Absolutely. And you're bringing up such an awesome point. Everyone feels like they would like you to hand them a meal plan. Tell me what to eat. It'll be so much easier. I'll just stick to it. We'll be good. However, to your point, we all have different likes, aversions, yeses, and nos that all surround our food for different reasons, including textures, crunchy, salty, sweet. Like, there are so many different things that we're seeking in a day that if somebody just hands us a meal plan, the likeliness of us sticking and adhering to that is very short term. I always tell my clients one of the best things that you can do for me if you want to sit down and meal plan is I would love a food likes and a dislikes list, because then we can build off of that. And I'm not telling you, why don't you think about an egg and, you know, some tuna for lunch? And they're going, I don't like either of those.
Do I have to, Mom?
Yeah.
Right? Yes. That's got to be a challenge. I give you credit there because that's hard. I want to go back to protein real quick, because I want to talk about actual protein sources. Do you have preferred protein sources?
Sarah Lee, I think this goes back to individualized again. I think it's important for us to kind of know a baseline of where we're already hitting our protein needs in the day. I don't think that we have to food log all day, every day, but I think it's super beneficial from a research standpoint to be able to look back over a 24-hour recall or even a week's recall of going, okay, this is where I naturally get my protein. I like a good lean beef. It fits in my diet. Chicken fits in my diet. And where am I not getting protein from? And am I willing to get a little more adventuresome in that area? And maybe you are also hinting towards different protein supplements. I'm not adverse to supplementing in the day. I don't think we need to be bodybuilder mentality and do like 60 grams of protein for a smoothie type thinking, but it doesn't hurt to have, like, if you like a smoothie for a breakfast every once in a while, we can cram a lot of nutrients in that, and to have 10 to 20 grams of protein from a source that you like, then great. It's really, I'm very generalized with a lot of this because, again, it comes to taste and it comes to people's personal needs of, like, this person wants it clean and they have food allergies and this person doesn't and they're going more for a taste or else they'll never do it. Like, there's so much gray area in there.
That's got to be challenging. Oh, you know, I just thought of something. Collagen. So the collagen that I use, 2 scoops in my coffee every morning, I get, it says 18 grams of protein. But is that really the same kind of protein that I would get from eating a hamburger?
We'd have to look at its direct source. My guess is it's coming from like a whey protein, something that would be more like the protein coming from your dairy sources. It's all good. Like, your proteins, this is where I don't nitpick and granulate it down to. I wouldn't worry about all those fine details. I would clump that 18 gram. Did you say 18 grams of protein?
Yeah, 18, I think.
But if we were looking, let's say you were supposed to have 80 grams of protein in your day, just, it counts. Put her in there. Yeah.
All right. Good to know. It's raining. Is it raining where you are?
It is. I don't like it. It's a little dreary.
We need it. We're in the middle of a drought for our listeners. We are in the middle of a drought and we've had one pretty much all summer. Fiber. I have to be frank. Fiber is something that I have overlooked in my diet until probably the spring when I really started to hone in on what I was eating. And I think we don't talk about fiber that much as a key nutrient. Why should we be getting more fiber and how much and what are some great fiber sources?
Thank you. Such a great question. And I agree. We should have a lot more attention to fiber for all sorts of reasons. So let's just talk first with the fullness factor. Fiber is very filling. And so it's kind of like you hear add protein to a meal for fullness and satiety. Fiber is the same. If you really notice you're one of those people that you struggle to get content, to get full at your meal, to take a peek at fiber makes a big difference. And it has a sustainability of fullness factor to it. So that would be one reason why I'd focus there. Cholesterol. If people's numbers are creeping up, if they have to watch their cholesterol, your LDL, your what we call like the bad cholesterol, if you do fiber, especially soluble fiber, it can actually help lower our LDL numbers, which is awesome. And then people love to talk about their bowel movements. So let's go there for a minute. And fiber definitely plays a role in there too, just healthy colon, healthy bowel movements. And that is, again, like one of those preemptive down the road to keep that healthy for all sorts of reasons, for travel, for, we should be paying attention to that. If you're constantly one of those people who's constipated, who doesn't have regular flow, you might not be getting enough fiber in your diet. And I do need to give a quick alert here. If somebody's getting motivated to have more fiber in their diet, you don't want to increase that too quickly. So we're supposed to have 25 to 35 grams per day. Again, this would be that research element, like take a couple of days, see how many grams of fiber you naturally get in. And if you're only sitting at 10 grams ish in your day, then up it to 15. And then once that's a little more normal, then up it to 20, working up towards that 25, 35 grams. And water intake is always important with fiber because it can actually do the opposite. It can constipate you if your water intake's not happening.
And that was my next question, is how much water?
And again, it depends on the person, the age, the activity level. I know I'm so boring with this, but the average person is going to do really well with 60 to 80-ish ounces of water in their day. If you are highly active, you're going to need more. If you're sedentary, you might not need as much. And if you're older, be careful. We can actually overhydrate ourselves. So like there is a be careful when you see people walking around with those milk jugs of water, you know, the gallon.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, it's fine for some people, but you take somebody who's either smaller, elderly, like you can hit this hyperhydration level and you start peeing out nutrients and it can be negative for your body.
Yeah. There is the Stanley drink mugs, whatever you want to call them. And I have one, but
that's okay though. Those I think are like 30. I want to say 30 ounces. Yeah,
30 or 40, but you know, it's got a straw. Yeah. And I don't want the lip lines. So I don't use the straw.
But you'd be good with a minimum of two of those in a day. And then if you had a super active day, have another. And we can listen to our bodies on that one too. Oftentimes, if we're feeling constantly hungry, drink a big glass of water. See if you were just thirsty. There's elements of that that we're just not listening to our body.
Do you have any thoughts about alcohol?
Oh, I always have thoughts about alcohol.
Not that kind.
No, I feel like a lot of women, this is a thing. And I am on this, I think, drink less lifestyle, but not omit type route. Like I call myself the wine loving dietitian. Like I don't really see a problem with when it is intentional and when it's built in for pleasure and you're aware that it's happening. I think a lot of people instantly think she's going to take away my alcohol or she's going to. And I feel like, again, it's understanding yourself. Are you using it to fill? It's kind of like emotional eating. Like you can think of emotional eating as, what are you hungry for? Are you actually hungry for de-stressing? Are you hungry for me time? Are you hungry for alone time? The same thing with drinking. Are you using alcohol? Are you using it to de-stress, to find me time? If we're using it, we need to investigate that because it might not even be about the alcohol. It's actually this other like area of your life that you need to pick apart and go, this is an emotional component that's happening. I'm lonely. I know that COVID got to a lot of people and alcohol really went up. And then people trying to figure out how to just bring it back to where we feel back in control. Because I think that's the thing with food or alcohol or anything, is that we want to be back in our own power and be making our own decisions and not accidentally doing something.
Yeah. And I think too, people think of, I know we're not talking diet, but in diet culture, there is that deprivation mindset. You know, instead of having three glasses of your favorite Chardonnay, just have one glass. If you can manage that and just count it in as one of your carbohydrate, then good.
Right. This is another area where we can go save calories. There is a Chardonnay by Kendall Jackson right now that's half the calories. It's 80 calories for your 5 ounces versus 120 for your 5 ounces. So it's like, if you like them both the same, pick the low-cal one, kind of like with beers, a Blue Moon versus the Miller Lite, you're going to save easily 70 plus calories. So you can kind of look at it just from that angle too. Again, as long as you feel in control.
And we could talk all day long about COVID and what that did to people's drinking habits.
No.
I was in that camp. I had to take a total step back from it. So we're doing good. If a client tells you that they don't have time to work out, what strategies do you suggest to help them feel more empowered to fit it into their day?
I love getting to just hear somebody's whole life. I definitely need to know my clients inside and out. And we do that through initial assessments and just understanding what the person's life looks like. I think once there's like a comfort level, and this is where like coaching is a beautiful thing, is that our instinct is to quickly go, I don't have time for. And then the more settled in you get in a conversation, what I oftentimes hear from individuals is, okay, I do have time, but it's only 15 minutes and I'm squeezing it into this pocket of time. And does that 15 minutes even matter? So I think more of my job is helping individuals understand that everything counts and all of it helps. And then where are our pockets and habit stacking, sandwiching beautiful habits in between things that are already flowing in our life? And an example with this would be the soccer mom or even the soccer grandma. I know a lot of grandparents are into this flow of running grandkids around and going, I've lost this whole evening, but you haven't. Like there's a pocket of time that when the kid gets out of the car, what about walking the park? And that's that pocket. Or at work, it's a lunch hour. Because I think a lot of us think I need to get to the gym and it needs to be an hour. It doesn't count. And I beg to differ. Like, I really feel like we start small and then those ripple on each other and the momentum builds. And then we find other areas that we can fit it in.
That is so true, though. I've talked to many women, and actually I was doing an event recently and I brought that up, is that we've gotten ourselves so programmed that in order to go to the gym, you've got to be there for an hour. And I saw a lot of head nodding and a lot of women were in agreement. I want to bring this up, though, because I quit my gym membership. I've had a lot of success losing weight and getting myself fit without going to the gym. If you have a client like me that says, you know what? No, I'm working out at home. How do you set that person up for success?
I'm going to give a word for your listeners today, fitness personality. Okay, this is the permission part. You have found your fitness personality, Michelle, that works for you. Like you don't mind being home to get your workout in. You still do it. You don't need the accountability or the energy from other people around you working out at a gym. If we kind of take that same thing, A, I think people need permission to know that the workouts can happen anywhere. It can be pushing your kid in a stroller to the park if that's what counts as a workout in your day. If it's home workouts, I think we live in a wonderful time frame of YouTube videos. Like we have free access to awesome workouts, to apps like the Peloton app, to yoga with Adrian. Like there's all these different people who provide free workouts and resources that if that is your fitness personality, throw it on the calendar and you're probably going to make it happen. If you think that you're going to keep making it happen and you're never hitting the play button, you're never doing it, there's probably something that's not aligning with your fitness personality. And maybe you need more of the social component, or maybe you need the personal trainer because you need it, the accountability on your calendar. There's areas within that that we would dig to be like, what's the real barrier going on here? That answer your question?
It absolutely did. Timing of protein post-workout. If I'm doing a workout, strenuous, lifting weights, what is my time frame for getting protein in after my workout to optimize muscle?
Yes, really within that 30 minutes when she's done working out, if that's coming from a gym. I know a lot of clients like to do like a protein shake on the way home. You're just replenishing within a quicker time frame to make sure that your body isn't just continuing to burn. You get to build within there as well. And to not overstress if it doesn't happen within that exact time frame, but that's something to shoot for.
Perfect. Lindsay, you live the lifestyle, I would assume. And I'm sure you have your own personal pillars for living a healthy life. Which are the most important to you?
Yes, I kind of, and I'm going to use intentionally on this one, but movement, versus like exercise per se, because just moving our bodies, I want to be moving when I'm 90. So if that means I need to be stretching and lubricating, you know, now so that my muscles and joints work later, that is a high priority on my list. Nourishment, not specific calorie levels, but like when I think of nourishing my body, I think of colors. I think of how each food provides its own benefit that we might not even still understand that benefit yet. So like variety, feeling full, feeling content, just like really having a holistic perspective around nourishment. Sleep is a huge one. I feel like that is a make or break for me. It ripples a positive direction or a negative direction in all other habits. And then I'm going to say rest, or like intentional space, because I don't think of rest and sleep as the same thing. When I say rest, I mean, I don't care if that's finding like a meditational moment in the day. That could be, I walked with a friend this morning, and that was actually like very, I had a space filled for me and like social time. So just making sure that the day isn't like planned out to the point of like, I've woke up and I've gone to bed and started all over again. Just intentional space where it cuddles on the couch with kids, you know, things that I'm like, I don't want to float through this season of life and look back and go, oh, I wish I would have.
That's great advice. I love that. I have one of reducing stress, which I think is part of your intentional rest and getting space. My other one is community. I think as we get older, our friendships become even more important than we realized. Keeping our current friendships strong, but also being very thoughtful about being open to meeting new people and making new connections. That's one of the things I love about doing this podcast, is that I get to meet people like Lindsay and Lori and a plethora of other people that now I've got these new friends. And on that note, you also have a podcast, and I'd love for you to tell the listeners a little bit about your platform.
Thank you. My platform is Direction, Not Perfection. I come at this strongly because I just feel like that perfectionism is a fall off for a lot of individuals on. If they would have just kept going with slow and steady goals and habits, they would have been so much further along in their health journey. The fall off comes from not being able to make it all happen in the day. It's like, I ate fast food for lunch, so now the rest of my day is ruined, and therefore I'll start tomorrow, or worse, I'll start Monday. And so my Direction, Not Perfection mentality is just, we're going to give a lot of grace, and then we're going to build a lot of resiliency. If we can jump back on faster and be consistent with not being perfect, then we'll stick with it. And that's really the importance of that. You talked pillars, and I have an acronym for your community that is pillars within my Direction, Not Perfection, but GRASP is the acronym, and it's something for your community to grasp, to hold firmly to. And the G is garbage in, garbage out, like making sure that our self-talk, you started with this in this podcast, but our mental space is in a really good place. That's part of the health journey, a huge part of it. R is rewriting the rules to success. And that if we can stop giving that scale so much weight, how's our day? The scale giving us a number that we're going to be proud of ourselves for the day, or reprimand ourselves all day. Maybe if we rewrote the rules to our success, we could have success being that I went for a walk, or I did a race with my grandchild. I took a trip with my grandkid. Like, success looks so different if we allow ourselves to look at it that way. The A is accountability, is the underpinning of everything that we do. And accountability, and that's where we started to talk about from another resource, from a psychologist, from a physical therapist, from a dietitian, from a personal trainer, from your physician, from showing up to a podcast. All of that's accountability, and people speaking into your, and you visually getting to take in all of this, like, I care about this, and therefore these goals are going to remain at the top of my priority list. And then the S is stop chasing somebody else's goals. Eyes on your own paper. And P is permission to stop being perfect, which kind of just summarizes everything that we just talked about today.
And I love that. Also, please tell the listeners where else they can find you. You have a website as well.
I do. It's healthaccountabilitycoach.com. So that was all one word. And there's a clickable link right when you get to the homepage. And it's a book a free one-on-one call with me, because a lot of individuals go, I hear you. I don't know where to start. I don't personally know where to start. It feels like 20 things that need to change and I'm in overwhelm. So that's what that one-on-one call is there for. It's to jump on and have everything that's floating around in our brain just kind of get pulled down to paper and have this deep breath, the shoulders relax of, okay, I now know where to start. I know how to like tackle this, what felt like an overwhelming journey.
Well, and the key is just get started. Don't wait, right?
You got it.
Lindsay, this has been really great. I am so excited that we were able to finally make this happen. I will put all of your information in the show notes, your website, your Instagram, anywhere where folks can find you. And I look forward to reconnecting again.
Thank you. I'm just so honored to be here today. Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks, Lindsay. Follow Asking for a Friend on social media outlets and provide a review and share this show wherever you get your podcasts. Reviews and sharing help us grow.